This is a Collider.com audio interview.
It was just sort of a thought one night. It might be funny to make a fake biopic. And I called up Judd like a day or two after having that thought and said, "Does this seem funny?" And like immediately we just sort of started writing it together, like within a few days even, just kind of trying to come up with rock biopic jokes. And we're both sort of big music fans and, you know, enjoy kind of crazy stories about rock lore. And just sort of started throwing things back and forth and kind of just discovered that if you took, you know, true stories that you knew and made them like 5% weirder,
2% weirder.
2% weirder.
And we watched every music biopic, but we also watched just generally biopics like the Marilyn Monroe HBO biography, just any kind of biopic.
And also like rock documentaries. I was watching a lot of the, like, people's actual life stories.
It was a great, terrible Jimi Hendrix biopic from Showtime. That was just great. I just recommend you hunt it down in your video store, which just looked terrible, and then they would cut to like stock footage from the 60s and cut to him in an overlit room. And then, you know, at some point during the process, you know, very early on, we thought, wow, if we could convince John C. Reilly to do this, this would be incredible. And so we started talking to him during the writing process.
Yeah.
What was the creation soundtrack? How did you guys make that whole thing?
John?
The creation of the soundtrack, well, Jake could probably speak pretty eloquently about this too, but we had this great stable of songwriters, and we kind of had this friendly, open competition, and we had a little webpage server, and people would just post things on there. What do you think about this? What do you think about this? And they all just started coming in. The first one that's really, like, knocked it out of the park was Marshall Crenshaw's Walk Hard, the title song. And then there's a bunch of great songwriters that we worked with, Mike Viola, Dan Byrne, Charlie Wadhams. Did I miss anybody?
Mike Andrews.
Oh, Mike Andrews.
Mike and Van Dyke Parks came and worked on the sort of Beach Boys psychedelic period song.
He asked him to make fun of himself.
Yeah.
We started like a year ago, and the cool thing about this movie was like, I wasn't that nervous on the first day of shooting like I usually am, because I felt like I'd sort of been meditating on the character for 4 months while we were recording. And we kind of found a lot of the tone of the movie and a lot of the ideas as we were recording. And once we started, it was really hard to stop. We recorded 35 songs. I mean, it's hard enough to make one album, but somehow after 4 months we had 35 songs, five of which I think were covers, but 30 original songs. I was pretty blown away by that. And then, it gave us kind of a tonal blueprint when we started the movie, all this music that we already had.
It seemed in the beginning like it was going to be the hardest part of this. Like, there were several conversations that Judd had in the very beginning, like, so we, you know, just trying to figure out sort of how funny the song should be versus how, you know, good they should be, and can they be both things at once, and sort of trying to come up with a strategy for it. It seemed daunting to come up with, because there was a lot of music written into the script, you know, titles, ideas for songs and for sequences built around the songs. And it's true that once we opened it up to a whole bunch of people, but it ended up being about five people that wrote the majority of the songs. And a lot of them are guys that I actually had known before. And Dan Byrne and Mike Viola were two of the first guys I ever mentioned this movie to.
Mike is the voice of That Thing You Do.
Yeah, he's the voice of Jonathan Scheck's character in that Thing You Do. And he recorded a bunch of albums with his band is called the Candy Butchers, and he has a couple of records himself. And Dan has a bunch of records. I just had a feeling both those guys would be great contributors, and Mike also. And it's true that once it got going, we suddenly had, you know, everybody had more ideas, and we got to where we could eventually, a month out, say, is there any kind of song that we've thought of that we don't have, and you know, we could generate them pretty quickly.
To Jake and Judd's credit, a lot of the songs were already existed in the script as concepts, you know, like a song called Guilty as Charged, about him taking these things that he'd done in his life and turning them into a song. And so the songwriters already had a leg up on a lot of these songs because they already either had the title or the general feeling that the song was supposed to convey, rather than just purely coming up with some idea. The script guided everybody, so, yeah.
John, can you talk a little about your influences? I mean, there sounds like a little bit of Gene Pitney, there sounds like a little bit of other vocalists from the past. So who did you study, and you know, what were you trying to convey with your character?
Well, the cool thing about the music in the movie is that I didn't have to really pick one person. As the time periods move on, the guy is such a chameleon that he goes with the time. So in the 50s, I was looking at people like Elvis and Roy Orbison and even early Johnny Cash. And then into the 60s was Brian Wilson. And either, as we went along, there was always a new person to kind of emulate. And I have very eclectic music tastes myself, so I can't see your face anymore. You're behind the camera.
He's photographing every word you say.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say. Like,
it's new technology.
So it was really like they say, every actor wants to be a rock star, every rock star wants to be an actor. This was like a dream come true for me. It was really, to be able to, just the studio part, just the recording, the music part, was like a real dream come true. And to have not only the songwriters and these guys, but the musicians that they collected, it was just walking into this dream job. I've done music in movies before, but much, much more limited, usually one or two songs here or there. And this was, I think the music in this movie stands alone as a great achievement. And I'm really proud of the movie, but I'm also very proud of the box of cocks that we're going to have coming out. It'll include all 30 songs. So. Well, yeah, we mentioned Mike Andrews is the producer of the music. He was the one kind of pulling all the levers, and he was arranging a lot of the music, and he was the one kind of guiding the musicians and pulling the correct groups of people together for the different sounds that we needed. And he was sort of our guru. And then there were a lot of, I'll mess up if I try to name everybody. I'll miss somebody, so I won't. But Mike was the ringleader in the studio, and then...
And I'll say John brings a lot of heat on his own. He can really play.
I was about to say
really
that.
Sing.
I bring a lot of heat on my own.
He wasn't like someone who had to be taught from the beginning.
I grew up doing musicals as a kid, so, and I had a lot of music in my family and in my past. So, yeah, although this movie felt like I really, at one point I even turned to Jake and said, I feel like I've been working my whole life for this moment. I didn't know it was coming. I didn't know it would be like this. But everything that I've learned before this is coming to play in this movie.
Jake and Jen, this for you guys might be one of the broader things you've done. Maybe some Ben Stiller, one of the broader things that you've done. Is it kind of freeing to go a little bit larger with some of the comedy?
I remember we used to do these U2 sketches back in 1992, where Bono was played by Ben, and we did a big, very elaborate Metallica sketch. The premise being that Metallica did the theme song to a body-switching movie starring Fred Willard and Pauly Shore. That's why we were canceled. It was very dense levels. For me, this, you know, as soon as Jake mentioned the idea, I thought, oh, well, this is going to be the most fun thing ever to work on. My grandfather was a music producer who produced the first Janis Joplin record and Dinah Washington albums and a lot of jazz, and so it's an arena that I've always been fascinated by. And I just also thought it was time to make a movie where you saw a man's penis in the movie, in a comedy, for a long time. I thought, we did the crowning shot, what about...
Not to give anything away.
Not to give it away, but there is a penis in this movie, so let's not get obsessed on how great the songs are. There's a penis in it. Well,
that's the surprise.
That's the surprise. It's my penis. I've gotten a big ego, and I just thought I wanted to show it.
You You know, one of the cool things about making this movie too was like, you know, one of the great things about doing biopics, and I've been in a couple of them, is, you know, the level of production design and the attention to detail and the usually this epic spread of the time period. But oftentimes when you're on those kind of movies, it's sort of, I don't know, there's this sort of sanctimonious, we've got to get it right for the memory. You know, like this kind of like overly serious, like, let's talk to some people and read about them. And what do they really say? And you kind of have to take it so seriously. But the cool thing about this was we get all of the bang that you get from doing a real biopic, but we got to have so much fun on the set every day, too. You know, we got to make fun of it and also live in all these different time periods. And the music, I would go back to the music again, which is a cool thing about the music is that we didn't set out to write bad music, you know, like, or dumb music. We really, I mean, you quickly find out when you try to write music, even if it's meant to be funny, that you really have to put your heart in it. You really have to try your very best to try to write a good song. It's really hard to write one good song, let alone 30. And I don't know, hopefully that comes across, like, the amount of care and love for music that we put into this movie. Because everyone involved, from the three of us sitting here to everyone else behind the scenes, really has a lot of love for the musician's journey. We're not just taking the piss, you know, we're really...
And all the band members, this is funny, all the guys in the band who are Tim Meadows, Chris Parnell, Matt Besser, who are all, you know, like improv comics, none of them played, and they all learned to play all the songs live. So, which required like a tremendous amount of work that, you know, like Tim didn't play drums and is absolutely spot on, you know, can now. He can play, those guys can play those songs now. And they would like sit there learning it. So they sort of gave it as much kind of intensity and, you know, kind of devotion as they would if they were playing actual.
Real quick, we have to pull John.
We've
got to go back.
I'm sorry.
But we're going to continue with...
It's having so much fun.
Any final?
It really was. It's fun to talk about this movie.
Let's have a final question for John. Anyone?
Just that it struck me in watching the book, the template or the tone of it is kind of like a
rock. Wait a second, I just realized I'm the producer of Step Brothers. You could stay for 10 minutes.
It's true.
What the fuck is going on here? Who's going to get mad? Me? And me? Let him wait.
Hey, Jeff, can I stay for 10 minutes?
Yeah, send that Will and have a beer. Continue.
We're ahead today, actually. We're one day ahead of schedule on that movie, so...
Yeah. It just struck me that the tone is very similar to the Monty Python Ruddles film, where you said that was a kind of a formal...
Oh, sure. That's one of the great ones of all time. It's very daunting to look at movies like Spinal Tap and the Ruddles and try to make a funny movie about music. Their music was incredible. All of those Eric Idle songs are unparalleled, so...
They weren't half bad, those songs.
Oh, they were fantastic. I mean, it all really holds up. That whole movie... holds up. So we were aware of that and had a lot of conversations about how funny should the songs be. What makes me laugh is that the songs, a lot of them are beautiful, and if you weren't listening to the words, you wouldn't notice how dumb some of them are. I was listening to a song the other day called Dewey Cox Died Today, which is a very
old... I write my own posthumous song about my own death before I die,
so that I'll be remembered correctly.
And it's so pretty. I felt bad that it was a dumb song. I'm like, and this is over. Someone should write normal lyrics to this song. So,
how difficult was it to cast the Beatles? And did you get nervous about poking fun at some legacy music?
Did I think Yoko Ono's going to come after me?
Yeah, that's yet to be seen, whether they come after us or not. I hope not. Yeah, it was pretty... Are we going to tell the truth to the journalists? It was pretty hard to cast the Beatles. It was, because whether, you know, you got to find someone who kind of looks at least vaguely like him or seems a little energy-wise a little bit like them, but could be funny, but wasn't afraid at this daunting challenge of playing Paul McCartney or John Lennon, and then to get four of them who were available on the same day, like, it was an ongoing game every day, like, okay, who else for the Beatles? We gotta figure out the Beatles. It shoots in a week, you know.
And then suddenly Justin Long shows up and he has a George Harrison impression.
Yeah.
He's just got that in his back pocket waiting for the call.
And Jason Schwartzman is like obsessed with Ringo, has been making the Ringo face his whole life, you know. Yeah, those guys, and then once they all got there, it was like, of course, this is the perfect team of people, but hopefully you agree.
Speaking about cast, you seem to use the same people in a lot of your movies, but this one has so many characters and so many historic characters. So I know that some might have been planned, but were there any surprises in casting? Or just got that casting in general?
Well, John, you can talk about our music cameos.
Yeah, well, another tough part to cast was Elvis. It wasn't in the clip, was it? No. Elvis Presley has a brief walk-on. He comes off stage right before I go on to sing that song, and that was another one. It was like, you'd be amazed what scaredy cats there are among actors out there. You say, like, you want to play Elvis? Oh, I don't know, man. That's a lot. Everyone knows who Elvis is. Like, yeah, so what? Like, come have fun. And then it turns out the guy with the biggest balls was Jack White from the White Stripes, and it totally showed up in the middle of a really busy schedule for him, and he was amazing. I mean, I don't think he was in Cold Mountain, he had a small part in that, but he really hung with the improv, and I don't know what it's going to end up being in the movie. I guess you guys are still toying with a couple different versions of that scene, but we did one take where all we did was talk in kind of what I call Tupelo Pigeon. Like, I don't know, I want to get some more. I want to get some piece of grit somewhere. All right, yeah. All this kind of country talk where only he and I can understand each other because we're both from the South. But it ends up being kind of a mix of those things as it is now. But yeah, so that.
I found Jack White irritating because he's like the coolest guy on earth. He's the greatest rock musician and writer and performer you've ever seen. And he's also funny. Fuck him. What is that? He was stepping on my territory. God damn it. I mean, he's so talented. It was daunting to all of us that he could do what we do just in his sleep as an afterthought.
Well, later he said, or through another person, I was told, Jack was so nervous. He was so nervous. Thank you for being so nice to him. So
it really could not have been looser.
Like, yeah, I couldn't tell you.
Truly improvising with John for hours, like never the same scene twice, which we think of as a good thing, and like, I mean, incredible.
And then Eddie Vedder came to do the basically, you know, he gets his Lifetime Achievement Award, and Eddie Vedder does the over-the-top induction speech. And that was also irritating, too, because Eddie Vedder, we have it all written out for him, and he just nails it, like, on the first take, perfectly.
Because he lived it, dude.
Yeah.
He already did it, for real.
And act as well.
He actually inducted R.E.M. into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he's done it a few times, and he can act, and has, like, perfect, pitch-perfect comic timing. Which
and he
isn't
was handsome
what you expect
as shit.
Better.
I was really too good-looking as well. I was really awed when all these people showed up to support our little movie here, like Jackson Brown and Lyle Lovett and Jewel and Ghostface Killer and Jack White and Frankie Muniz. Is he still in the movie?
All the monsters.
I'm not trying to be mean. I really did. Frankie Muniz retired. He came out of his racing career to go play Buddy Holly for a scene. But
because of the penis? I'm not sure. Is that R?
It's not hard.
It's not hard.
That guess anything?
Which basically means like a little boy can look down and see it, and then but he's not allowed to look up and see what on the screen. I don't understand this country.
How detailed of the biography of Dewey Cox did you work out beforehand, or was that just part of writing the script?
Well, I don't think we're not those people who like write like 80 pages of single spaced bio background because we're lazy. But we were forced to figure it out. You know, a lot of the details of his tragic yet triumphant life.
A lot of the backstory stuff we'd end up riffing on in the studio too when we're recording the music, like a song to remind us of something. Oh yeah, I remember in the '60s, and this kind of person would sing this kind of song, and then his version would be whatever, you know. So we filled in a lot of blanks like that. Because Jake was there all the time when we were recording the music, too, so he was almost like directing the film before we started shooting.
Did you guys look at the recent spoof movies to kind of get an idea of what not to do?
I studied them. No. Well, tell that to my 10-year-old daughter. She digs them. No, we didn't, but I'm a big fan of spoof movies in general. I mean, certainly some are much better than the others, and the Zucker Brothers movies are kind of some of the funniest movies of all time. Airplane probably is the funniest movie ever made. There's probably no movie that got bigger laughs in a theater than Airplane when it came out. So I think, you know, like all movies, there's good ones and bad ones. We just thought it would be funny to make a movie that wasn't like, it, you know, this isn't a joke-for-joke spoof like Airplane or Not Another Teen Movie, things like that. This really is more making fun of the genre and the structure of these movies, and the fact that if you watch a ton of biopics, you'll see that a lot of the scenes are the same scenes. It's almost unavoidable in telling the stories of musicians that there's rehab and multiple wives and ups and downs.
Loss of senses.
Yes.
Are we officially fucking with Will and Adam now if I don't go back to work?
This is like a standoff that I'm comfortable with.
Okay, good. Just checking.
I just want to test the power trio and to see who will come here, will McCabe go home, what happens. Actually, John, you can go now, actually, I think.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
I did. There's actually a funny sequence where when Dewey is older, he's semi-retired and a rap star samples Walk Hard and makes the filthiest song you've ever heard, and that rapper's name is Little Nutsack. That song is really dirty. We asked this guy to write a dirty rap incorporating lyrics of Walk Hard, and man,
it's really filthy.
It, look at me. I'm embarrassed. It's hard for me to get there. But I don't even like that it's on my computer at home.
It was also funny that the day we were shooting that scene and they referred to him by name as, it was in the script, Nutsack. And we got a memo from the legal, you know, there's like a clearance thing. And they said, you can't call him Nutsack because there's four other rappers named Nutsack. So we call him Lil Nutsack, which is fine. But four different spellings of Nutsack.
Nuts with a Z.
Is that it?
Okay. That's right, I guess. All right, thank you very much for coming.
Thanks.
I'm sure you'll see the movie in a few weeks. We're almost done, so thank you for taking a look at this.
Yeah, thanks for coming out.